And I apologize for our starting late this morning, but we need a full complement from all of our jurisdictions to get started. Chair Downey has asked me to conduct the meeting this morning. So we'll begin, as we usually do, with our safety minute from Mr. Jim Dougherty.
Thank you, Chairman Goldman, and good morning, members of the board. As is customary, and as far as our safety announcement, in the event of a building alarm, we'd have asked that you exit through one of the doors in front of me to my left or behind me to my right and cross the street utilizing the crosswalk at Fifth Street and assembling in the front of the National Building Museum so that we can make sure that everyone is accounted for. Our safety contact for this morning, as many folks are using extension cords during this season, I wanted to just share that the United States Consumer Product Safety Commission estimates that each year about 4,000 injuries associated with electric extension cords are treated in hospital emergency rooms. About half of the injuries involve fractures, lacerations, contusions, or sprains from people tripping over extension cords. The CPSC also estimates that about 3,300 residential fires originate in extension cords each year, killing 50 people and injuring about another 270. The most frequent causes of such fires are short circuits, overloading, damage, and/or misuse of extension cords. Today, we'll look at some tips when using extension cords. Use extension cords only when necessary and only on a temporary basis. Do not use extension cords in place of permanent wiring. Do not remove the prongs of an electrical plug. If plug prongs are missing, loose, or bent, replace the entire plug. Do not use an adapter to defeat a standard grounding device. Only place three-prong plugs in three-prong outlets, and do not alter them to fit into a two-prong outlet. Use extension cords that are of the correct size or rating for the equipment in use. The diameter of the extension cord should be the same or greater than the cord of the equipment in use. Only use cords rated for outdoor use when using a cord outside. Do not run cords above ceiling tiles or through walls. Keep electrical cords away from areas where they may be pinched and areas where they may pose a tripping or fire hazard, such as a doorway, walkways, or under carpet. Always inspect the cord prior to use to ensure the insulation isn't cut or damaged. Discard damaged cords, cords that become hot, or cords with exposed wiring. And never unplug an extension cord by pulling on the cord. Rather, grab the plug and remove the cord utilizing the plug. And by following these tips, hopefully we will have a safe holiday season along with the other safety tips we provided. That would conclude our safety contact, Mr. Goldman.
Thank you, Mr. Dougherty. That's probably very good advice at this time of year. I noticed on TV show weather the other night they were showing a satellite picture of the East Coast from space, and it was all lit up from New York to the Washington area. So people were using a lot of electric power at this time of year, so your advice is good advice to have.
Chairman, could I take 1 minute to bring something to the committee's attention?
Ms. Downey?
This week's passenger transport from APTA has an insert covering the 100 most important safety advances in transit over the last more than a century, going back to the invention of the track circuit. But I note that Washington Metro's fatigue risk management program was identified as one of the top 10 safety advances in the last century, so
cool.
You should be proud of that.
Thank you. Kudos, isn't it? We'll begin with the approval of the agenda. We have one item this morning, so I'll entertain a motion to approve today's
Hello.
Agenda.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
And entertain a motion for approval of the minutes from our last meeting of November 20th, 2014, which are in your packet. Motion?
Second.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And we'll go on to today's event. We have one item on the agenda today, and that is a follow-up from our last meeting in which we requested from a representative of the TOC and our own staff to provide a report on the safety certification process for the new 7000 series rail cars, which will be entering in service early next year. To help further clarify and explain the certification process, staff will walk us through the process, which ensures that rigorous testing has been completed on all the systems that the new rail cars on the new railcars prior to their entering revenue service, that it complies with FTA requirements, and that the process satisfies the TOC Tri-State Oversight Committee's request for specific documentation. I'll turn now the floor over to Mr. Dougherty first, and he'll be followed by Mr. Troop to give us the overview of the process. Gentlemen.
Thank you, Mr. Goldman, and good morning again. Since the topic of the safety certification has been raised recently, we wanted to provide the board with an overview of the 7,000 series car safety and security certification program and demonstrate compliance with all FTA guidelines and provide a clear understanding of the rigorous safety testing being conducted on every new 7,000 series rail car before it carries passengers in our system. WMATA is executing a 5-year safety certification plan for the new 7,000 series rail cars. The plan was developed in 2009, creating a systemic process for the safety certification, again, of each of the 7,000 series rail cars and every safety critical component on these cars. The process engages the contractor, WMATA Engineering Department, and the WMATA Safety Department in one unified, cohesive program. WMATA carefully followed the recommended process outlined by the FTA. However, it's worth noting that the FTA does allow flexibility for transit agencies to develop project-specific certification plans. Now I'd like to turn it over to Mr. Troop, who will talk about the safety-critical components.
Well, good morning, Chair Goldman and board members, and thank you, Jim. The acceptance of the cars into the system and the safety and security certification process, as Jim mentioned, you know, begins long before the manufacturing starts. A safety has to be designed at the car at the onset, and the design part process, the design process itself is actually part of the safety and security certification. It begins with the identification of the certifiable items list, or the SIL. And in the case of the 7K, this is just shy of 300 separate components or items. The SIL uses the specification requirements to ensure that all documentation concerning testing and acceptance is completed and that any issues may be resolved. The concerns found during the design must be documented to show resolution prior to commencing into production. Remember, the design has to allow for a repeatable approach that is executable, consistent, and also maintains the highest degree of quality. In addition, it allows for the safe and efficient maintenance of the car. Obviously, it would do no good to create a design that could not be maintained to a high degree of reliability. The process of safety certification continues throughout production and also into acceptance. And to illustrate what I've done is I've taken one system, the braking system, you know, which is obviously a safety critical component of the car, and I want to show you how it's tested into final acceptance. Before anything is built, thorough reviews of the designs are done to make certain that the braking system meets WMATA specifications. Now, the braking system is somewhat similar to when you were 9 years old and you graduated from pedal brakes to those hand brakes that are on your car. It consists of calipers and pads and the actuating mechanism, only obviously on a rail car it's much more robust and we use hydraulics instead of your hands to close the brake pad to the friction ring. Per our specification, the contractor created mock-ups of the components at every stage of the design process, and this mock-up practice was the first of its kind in any rail car production. Extreme testing of the brake parts is done before the start of production during design qualification. The systems are tested to the point of failure. For example, a machine simulated the weight of 252 passengers to ensure the brakes would be effective with that heavy of a load. If you really tried to put 252 passengers in a rail car, you might think you're in Beijing or Tokyo. But these tests are designed to push the components above and beyond routine scenarios. The design can be tweaked throughout this process, and by the end of this series of tests, you have a final design, and you're now ready to move into production. WMATA quality and engineering teams closely examined the very first item off the production line, and this is referred to as the golden unit. And this is for first article inspection. We have teams that are embedded in the plant to inspect and check that every measurement, weight, dimension, and any other specification requirement is being produced exactly as it was designed. This golden unit is the first off the line, but the last out of the factory. It remains in the plant as a model of how every piece must be produced. Factory acceptance is a series of tests that we do to make certain that every part on the rail car functions properly as an individual component and then also in conjunction with the rest of the car. The brake equipment will undergo factory acceptance tests at the plant where they're produced and then again when it is assembled as part of the rail car. The test track that Kawasaki built in Lincoln, Nebraska was created for factory acceptance testing. Every piece of the rail car and every assembled car goes through factory acceptance tests before being sent to WMATA. If you consider the design qualification test to be extreme to testing for the individual brake parts, then our on-site qualification testing is extreme testing of the fully assembled rail cars. This testing is done on all of the pilot cars as they are put through rigorous testing on WMATA's property. We've been in this stage for almost a year now with the pilot cars. We are testing the equipment to the point of destruction, but we put the cars under extreme conditions and introduce failures to ensure their performance. I talked earlier about simulated weight on the car. Well, the on-site qualification test, we use sandbags to simulate passengers, and we will take away the dynamic electromagnetic braking system and test if the friction brakes can stop the train on their own with this kind of passenger loading that we have. Routine acceptance is the final stage of testing that will be conducted on every single rail car that we accept into the WMATA system. And this is before it goes into revenue service. This testing checks that all systems on the car are functioning properly and the car is ready and safe to carry passengers. In addition, we have inspectors permanently embedded in the manufacturing plant, and we do routine inspection of the subcontractor's manufacturing along with Kawasaki to make certain that the design is repeatedly manufactured and the car is assembled with the highest degree of quality. These are photos of extreme testing to push the components to the limits and determine the breaking points. If we look clockwise from the top left, you have the test set up for the simulated heavy load test on the brakes. In the next picture, you can see the sparks flying as the simulated load is applied. Doors are checked for 1.5 million cycles, and we even submerge the engine in the water. But even more interesting is when we submerge the engine into the water, we actually keep it running. So testing is extensive, it's programmed, and it's deliberate, and it's truly an integrated effort from all departments to ensure we're getting and delivering a safe and reliable product to our passengers, all of which is fully documented and traceable as part of the safety and security certification process. So every single test that we do, every single qualification, specification, design, when we change the design, if there's a reason to change the design and we go back, all of that is part of the safety certification process that we document, that we can trace back to a point to say that this was tested, signed off by all the interested parties on this, and that's how we get to testing the car for final acceptance. Jim?
Thank you, Mr. Troop. That provides certainly a good overview in the field, but we just also want you to be aware that the WMATA Safety Department is responsible for overseeing the documentation at every step of the process, that it is has been completed by the engineering group and all of the other groups. The 7000 series safety certification plan completes each of the 10 steps recommended that's on the board in the FTA safety and security certification program. This includes creating a list of all safety critical components and potential hazards, working with the 7K safety and security certification working group to develop design conformance checklists. The TOC representatives have been, you know, a part of this group from the onset, providing oversight during the test phase by monitoring and verifying that all tests are completed and reviewing the documentation and making the final determination that the contractor has delivered a product that meets the specifications laid out in the contract and specifically for safety. In fact, the certification process developed by WMATA for the 7K project goes above and beyond the FTA guidelines. The 7000 series program is the first of its kind in the industry to apply the principles of the FTA's new safety management system, or SMS framework, to the development of the certifiable items list and the hazard tracking log. WMATA has prepared a design verification report, which has never been done as part of WMATA safety certification program. And as you can see, safety is certainly the driving force behind the 7,000 series rail cars. From conception to production, testing to operational readiness, and into daily operations, we are part of an overall team, actually, to make sure that these cars are safe for our passengers. And that would conclude our report this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Dougherty. I know you had some large loose leaf books with you this morning.
Yes, sir.
Could you describe, could you show us what those and what those consist of?
Actually, we have, you know, as far as some of the paperwork, actually, and the documentation, this one is specifically deals with the Tri-State Oversight Committee's requirements and WMATA's MOU. This is basically a binder of not all, but some of the 7,000 series documentation that's already been completed throughout the process. Another binder, actually, these are the Federal Transit Administration's guidelines and the certification plans and everything that we show that we are in compliance with the FTA rules. And these are documents for the safety certification, actually, from Kawasaki that we do review. And then throughout the process, as we talked about yesterday in the safety certification working group meeting, you know, the documentation all goes through the safety department from Kawasaki, the project team, to our assistant chief safety officer, who reviews the documentation and then acknowledges that it's satisfactory as we go through this. And there's just in those documents, there's over a couple of thousand reviews that have been made. So it's been quite extensive as we've moved through this process, and it's been a great product and a safe product that we feel very comfortable with.
Thank you. I know I have a few more questions, but let's get questions from other members of the committee. Mr. Downey?
Yeah. Within the certifiable elements, in the example you used with the brake system, which is hardware, how much is software, and how do you deal with software in the certifying and the safety process?
I wouldn't be able to give a specific quantification of what the software, but the software certification process, there's internal processes that the, let's take the ATC system, for example. The ATC system on the car has software associated with it. We have the internal manufacturer's certification process that we go through for the software. Obviously, the lines of code, the parameters are written for the software, what the software must do. In addition to what it must do in certain failure points, you know, if the ATC system, it must fail to the most restrictive operation of the train should there be any point of failure. So those parameters are written for the software. It's understood what the software needs to do, and that's checked before anything is checked to make sure that the parameters are done. In addition, the manufacturer has a software certification process that they go through that we have looked at and have approved. For example, should there be one change in one line of code for the software and ATC package, it goes back through their certification process, and it takes about 3 weeks to be able to do that. Because they need to obviously check through the software that there any change in the line of code has not affected something else. Because again, like you said, since it's not hardware, they need to be able to, you can't do a physical check on it. What's most important is the software is there's a performance check behind the software to make sure that it's performing correctly. And again, like I stated before, one of the most critical parts about it is the failure checking. What happens if? What happens if, you know, we have two codes that aren't correct? What if some anomaly occurs? How does the software react to that? So all that is planned out, beforehand, and all those test parameters are changed against that.
And I assume we have a configuration control process that ensures that over the life of the cars, software stays as it's supposed to be.
Yes, that's correct. We have a configuration control process that the manufacturer uses before the start of production. During the design process, they have a configuration control management, so we know why lines of code were changed. During production, that is done, and then post-production and into manufacturing, also through the maintenance. The maintenance and engineering department have their own configuration management that they do for that to make sure that we have the right code that's in the software, if we need to make any changes on it. So that's correct, yes.
Any questions? Mr. Boulder.
Thanks for the great presentation. Does the TOC send people out to Lincoln, Nebraska to review all this information?
They have not thus far, sir.
But we have employees out at Kawasaki working with the manufacturer?
Yes, we do. We actually had employees and inspectors in Japan during the pre-production cycles, pre-production manufacturing, which was important as we were going through the items there. And we have full-time inspectors in the Kawasaki plant, and that's to make sure whatever technology transfers were done between Japan and Lincoln, Nebraska, that happened, and also to constantly do audits and checks during the manufacturing process. So, yes, we do. They're continually out there and making audits and checks. And there's stop points within the manufacturing line where the just an assembly line, you know, the car moves through, it's a stop point. At that point, the production stops on that specific item, whatever it is. Kawasaki inspectors, they have company stop or manufacturing stop points, and also owner stop points, where then our inspectors go on and check things. So there's a very deliberate process in that regard, actually on the assembly line.
Mr. Downey.
To follow up on that, in addition to inspecting at the Kawasaki plant, I think you said we also send inspectors to the subcontractors.
That's correct. Yeah, we have
activity. So if the brakes are being done elsewhere, we have people out on that line.
Absolutely. What we don't have them out there full time. Kawasaki has certain points that they go through for quality control checks, documentation. Kawasaki sends people out there. We send people out there periodically to do audits on those particular items, whatever they happen to be, so that we do a sampling of that, you know, to be able to make sure. So, yes, that's very critical to us as well.
Anybody else? Mr. Trooper, the safety and certification is being done on the test train. That consists of a four-car train, is that correct?
Actually, it's an eight-car train. We have, the way the testing is done, if you can imagine what we do is you look at it from a subcomponent to a fully assembled eight-car train. So we do all the subcomponent assembly parts separate. You know, we test them. We make sure that everything's working there. Then we get into a merry repair. The cars are in an ABBA configuration. So then the AB configuration is checked to make sure that is correct. Then we put the cars together as a four-car configuration, and we make sure that the four-car configuration works correctly. And then we are now testing an eight-car train. We're actually testing an eight-car train is through the system to make sure that the eight-car train works properly. That's correct, yes.
And just for a point of clarity, could you just describe what the difference is between an A and a B car in that ABBA configuration?
Yeah, In our AB configuration, one car has the control panel where the operator has an operator's control panel on it. The B car does not, so it has to be in a quad configuration to be able to run on the system. In addition, we have efficiencies in that some of the propulsion control packages are on one of the cars and not on the other. All the trucks have motors, but the control package is on one. Obviously, the ATC components are only on one of the cars. So that's how the AB configuration works on that. So, and actually, not having the cab gives us more passenger space.
So an eight-car configuration would be ABBA, ABBA?
Correct, yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's eight cars. So the safety certification will certify the safety for both a four-car and eight-car mm-hmm. configuration.
Correct.
And I know from our prior conversations, we will not be operating the 7000s in a six-car configuration.
We will not be operating in a six-car configuration. That's correct.
But are we going to do any
safety
certification for the six-car just in case there's emergencies?
We do qualification tests for six-car trains, but just simply as a system, but not because of any reason. We are not going to run the trains. We're not going to run the trains as a six-car configuration.
Final question is, now that you have the eight-car configuration, are there any minimum hours or mileage testing requirements that you plan to do on the whole system before going into revenue service?
We have 1,000 hours, Rodrigo, 1,000 hours. We have 1,000 hours that the car has to run. If anything happens within that 1,000 hours, then it goes back. So we're within that cycle.
We restart the clock on that, yes.
So we're still in the 1,000 or we've completed?
We are still in the 1,000, is that correct? Yes.
And how long does it take to run 1,000 miles?
Well, we've been in this for a year in the qualification period of time. So, but yeah, it's a significant process that we go through. And like we said, I'm sorry.
Yeah, but when we get to the production cars and they come in, then you're talking about, if everything goes well, within a month's time, you've run through the test, right? Right, Rodrigo? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Not every train set will get it, you know, 6 months, a year.
I'm sorry, I was correct. I think it's 1,000 miles, not 1,000 hours, right?
1,000
miles. I'm sorry, 1,000 miles, yeah.
Very good. Thank you. Any other final questions? Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you, Mr. Dougherty. Thank you, Mr. Kidd, for that report. Very good. I think that concludes the one item on today's agenda. I should just note that our next meeting will be on, I believe it's January 22nd, in which we will have three items on the agenda, the quarterly safety review, the quarterly security review, and we'll have a report and briefing on cybersecurity efforts of the authority. So, gentlemen, thank you very much. Call the meeting to order. Adjourned.